Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mommy Faceted podcast, a podcast for moms of color who are juggling motherhood, career, and just real life. And I'm your host, Rachel Pierre. So today on the podcast, we have a very good friend of mine, and she's actually my line sister as well, Dr. Jessica Young Brown. She is a licensed clinical psychologist who's focused on how faith and mental health really intersect. And then she just became an author, Making Space at the Well, Mental Health and the Church. So if you are interested in that, please definitely find her. I will have show notes for everything on the website at mommyfaceted.com. On today's episode, I talked to Jessie about so many things. This is really one of my favorite episodes. And I actually was just re-listening and picked up a couple more things that I, you know, hadn't really picked up on that she said. So I love all of this. We talk about how do you really manage all the different parts of you? And Jessie makes an interesting point about how she sort of brings them all into every facet of what she does. She doesn't leave parts of herself, you know, at the door when she walks into a room. And I absolutely love that advice. She gives advice for step parents, or if you are co-parenting as a mom of a bonus daughter, she has years of experience, you know, figuring out what her role is and making it all work to have this great relationship with her daughter or her stepdaughter. And so we talk about that. And then we talk about the mental load of motherhood and just really how do you decide whether something is worth your time, worth the energy, if you have the space to do it, and what to do if you have to, you know, sort of let something go that you really wanted to do. And so if you want to hear more from Jessie or find out how to get in contact with her, just head over to my website, mommyfaceted.com. I also wanted to let you all know that we are having another virtual event next week on April 30th, and it is Be a Breastfeeding Mom. So if you are new to parenting, if you're new to breastfeeding, or maybe you're, you know, 6 months down the road in breastfeeding and you don't know how to wean or how to increase your supply, if you don't know what expectations you should have as a breastfeeding mom, all of these questions will be answered. I have some questions that I am asking our speakers. We have two expert speakers, but you'll also have a chance to ask your own questions, and this is totally free. So to get tickets for this free event, just head over to bit.ly/beabreastfeedingmom. So that's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/beabreastfeedingmom. Or you can head over to Instagram and look up Mommy Faceted. The link is in my bio to get free tickets. All right, now let's get into the interview. Hi, Jessie. How are you? And welcome to the Mommy Faceted podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, I am excited to have you on as well, to finally have you on. And I know you have a lot of exciting things to talk about. So I would like to just jump right in. First, I'd like to go back to before you became a mom. Did you always know that you wanted to be a mom? Was it something that just kind of, you know, was never in your kind of thought process for your plans? Or, you know, before you were a mom, what were those beginning days like for you?
Sure. I definitely knew I always wanted to be a mom. I grew up as an only child. And so I was determined to not only to be a mom, but also to not have an only child, because I strongly liked being an only child. So I always knew it was something that I wanted to do, and like to be a mom, not of a bunch of kids, but of more than one kid. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had really great relationships with my parents. I always felt like they actually liked me and enjoyed being around me, you know?
Yeah.
Able to think about being able to kind of create that environment for someone else. So I will say that I was really, I knew I wanted to be a mom, but I was very terrified of pregnancy. And so that was something that I kind of thought a lot about and had some worries about, but my first pregnancy was actually really great, so I was pleasantly surprised.
Good, yeah. So where do you think that nervousness came from? Just the unknown, or,
you know, I really stories don't know. You've heard? I think it must have been stories that I heard, because I don't really have memories of like people around me having bad pregnancies. I don't know, maybe I watched too many movies or something.
Yeah.
But I definitely had this like irrational big fear. And then when I got pregnant with my son, I was like, oh, this isn't, like, it's okay. I feel fine. So I think I just really built it up in my head.
Yeah, I know. Because pregnancy is a whole bunch of, like, you're excited and then nothing happens until the last, like, 2 months. So, yeah. Good.
So you have your son and you have a bonus daughter. And so I would love to know just some of the things that have surprised you about motherhood that you never thought, especially like you said, you had good relationship with your parents, but just having your own children is completely different. So
It
any
totally is.
surprises?
I think, I'm really, my bonus daughter, she just turned 13, and my son is 4.5. So I was really blessed because she really just taught me a lot about what it means to be a mom and to really earn your children's respect. I know to some people that might sound weird, but my husband and I started dating when she was around 2, and she didn't know me at first, and so I really had to like prove myself as a trustworthy person. And then once I proved myself, we were good. We have a great relationship now. And so it's just been interesting to navigate making mistakes and figuring your kids out and watching all the different changes as they grow and develop. Some of the surprises for me have been just how intuitive and how aware kids are from very early. I think as adults, we sometimes think that we can like get over on our kids, like they don't really know what's going on. And they know everything that's going on, and sometimes are more able to kind of assess situations than we are.
Oh,
So
absolutely.
I have thankfully have the kind of relationships with both my kids that they feel like they can be honest with me and tell me what they think about things. And so often I'm just really curious to hear like what they think and how they view the world. It's just so fascinating to see it through their lenses. And then for my bonus daughter and for my son, it's different because my son, because he's home with me, I control so much of his environment. And with my bonus daughter, she's got a whole other house, a whole other family, and another set of parents. And so it's interesting to see, just how there's some things that are really similar about them, and there are other things that are different because they have different experiences too.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the differences like that. So just any like top three tips on when you are coming into a family that's already has children, or you're kind of a step parent or co-parent, any top tips you would give just in general to any moms who are in that situation, maybe having some difficulty or they're entering it into the first time?
Sure. I would say, particularly as a woman, coming into a situation like that, understand that your role is not to be like a replacement mom. Like my bonus daughter has a mother, and that her mother is not going to be replaced, right? And so my role in her life certainly is to be a mother figure, but we've talked about even down from like what she calls me to, the kinds of conversations we have. My place has always been to just be a support person to her and to help her to navigate that. And so I think it can be helpful to just kind of know your role, so to speak, and to not try to bombard your, you cannot bombard your way into a kid's life. That's not the way children work. And so I think it takes time to really build that relationship. The second piece I would say, and this is whether it's a kind of a blended family or not, is to be on a united front as much as you can with the other parent, to try to provide some consistency for kids so they don't have to try to figure out and try to navigate, really different environments and relationships and different sets of rules. And the third piece I would say is just acknowledge when you make a mistake. Like, as parents, we screw things up sometimes. And I think we owe our kids the respect to say, "Hey, I'm sorry. I think I messed this up. Can we try again? Or what can we do differently next time?"
And that's so funny you bring that up. I think that's good advice for just any parenting, because my son will definitely come to say, "Mommy, you did such and such, or you said you were going to do this." And it just is so jarring when your child says it to you that you're like, "Man, I guess I really need to get it
Yeah, and especially little kids, like preschool age kids, because our sons are not far apart in age. And like kids are really justice oriented. Like if they feel that they've been wronged in some way, they're
Yeah.
they will stand up for themselves. Even if it's their parent, especially if it's their parent.
Especially, yeah.
Yeah.
So true. So true. Good. So you are a psychologist and you also are a professor. And so you have a bunch of different roles and you're an author now. Congratulations again. And so you have all of these roles, then your wife, mom, all these things. What is, I guess, something that you've been able to do to sort of manage, especially in your role, you know, you deal with, you know, you can't necessarily leave your work at home all the time. I'm sure you take a lot of it with you, or you're thinking about things, or just, you know, you have to actually do maybe some catch-up work at home. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you do to kind of separate the work life from mom? And then you also, you know, you are Jessica. So, you know, all of those different parts of you, how do you kind of separate it or turn the head off, or, you know, try to balance, not balance, but, you know, kind of manage those things?
Yeah. So in terms of just like the different tasks that I have, mm-hmm. I schedule. This is, we're in the midst of a pandemic right now, so I'm kind of less mm-hmm. scheduled because I can't be as scheduled as I normally am. But I'm pretty diligent about like certain hours are dedicated to certain places and certain tasks. Typically. Mm-hmm. So I see my clients on certain days and I only see clients on those days. I, you know, teach during certain times. I have office hours during certain times. I have a writing block during the week. And so it really helps me to kind of block my time in 2 to 3 hour blocks mm-hmm. to keep things organized. One of the things that helps is as a person and as a professional, I'm really committed to like all of my parts being connected. And so what that means for me is I have different jobs and different roles, but I try to show up the same way in all those places. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it helps me even when I have to transition tasks, I don't feel like I have to transition who I am.
Yourself. Yeah. Your identity.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that really helps me.
Yeah. I think that's so important. That you're kind of intertwining the roles instead of trying to be these completely separate people. And that probably is maybe a roadblock in some women's mind that they think they need to be, you know, on when they're mm-hmm. at work. But then, you know, you do have to be on when you're at home, too. So it's kind of, sure. you know, you definitely need to kind of have that same sort of mindset through all of those shifts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for me, it's about just kind of determining I think a lot about core values. Mm-hmm. And then like, how am I living into or executing those core values wherever I am? Right. Mm-hmm. And so I talk about my clinical practice when I'm teaching, not necessarily my clients, but just like the work, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. I'm one of those people that will talk about my family when I'm teaching or whatever, you know, like for mm-hmm. me, it's important for all those parts to be integrated because I don't want to feel like I have to walk into a room and leave parts of myself at the door. Mm-hmm. That feels really incongruent for me. And for mm-hmm. that's when I have the hardest time managing all the different things that I'm doing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you said you talk a lot about, or you think a lot about your core values. So mm-hmm. what does that look like? Do you kind of every quarter sort of, you know, sit down and make sure you're prioritizing yourself? Or is it just a natural thing that in your mind, does this line up with what I said I wanted to do or who I said I want to be? Or do you journal? Like, how does that look that you think about your core values?
Yeah, so I would say it's both and. Mm-hmm. One of the most meaningful experiences that I had when I was in graduate school, my PhD program, was I had a professor who told us to write out a mission statement, like our mission statement mm-hmm. for life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went to grad school right out of undergrad. So I'm like 23 years old. I'm like, I don't have a mission statement. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Was really helpful, and it's something that every once in a while, usually kind of when the year turns, I go back to and revisit mm-hmm. and really think about who do I want to be in the world, and all of these different parts of me, how can I make sure that they're all serving the impact I say I want to have in the world? And so it looks like I said, usually at the beginning of the year, really sitting down. I'm one of those people that likes to have like two or three kind of core words to focus on for the year. Mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. is really helpful for me. Mm-hmm. And so I do that. I revisit my mission statement. I also, when something doesn't feel good for me, or I feel like I'm not in a flow, or I'm not enjoying it, particularly professionally, usually I can track that back to I've violated my values in some way, or I've moved myself away from the things that are really important to me. I'm one of those people that I'm kind of like a high activity person. And so I'm always doing 50 million things. Sometimes that's not particularly helpful. But so I have to catch myself, because sometimes, you know, someone will ask me to do a workshop or ask me to, you know, do something. And my sort of first strategy is to say yes sometimes.
Yeah.
But then sometimes it's like, okay, yeah, you could do that, but is it helpful to you? Does it fit with what you want to do in the world? Do you really have the time? And so a practice that's been helpful for me to try to manage that is to just to slow down. And I don't say yes to anything automatically. I'll say, okay, give me the information and I'll get back to you, or let me think about it or whatever. And that helps me to really, not necessarily in a regimented way, but just to reflect on, does this match who I want to be? Does this match the kind of professional I want to be, the kind of person I want to be? And now as a wife and mother, I also have to balance that with, is this going to be worth the time I take away from my family to engage in this activity? Because I also don't want to be so professionally driven that I neglect the people I live with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that's kind of come out of this whole social distancing, is seeing how much of my child's life I do miss being at work and doing, like you said, doing all these 50-11 things, and like just seeing all these little daily things that I've never seen before, because I just can't, you know, they're at daycare or whatever. So yeah, I think seeing, you know, having that perspective when things go, you know, semi-normal, if, you know, whatever our new normal is.
Right. If it ever happens.
Yeah, exactly. If we ever get to go outside. yeah, I think it'll be a good kind of perspective to have, like you said, seeing, is this really worth the time that I'm going to be taking away?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So I wanted to talk to you about just some of the things that you are, you know, kind of skilled in understanding and sort of helping others understanding themselves, which is, you know, anxiety, their mental health. And I really wanted to get into the mental load that moms have to deal with.
Yes.
And yeah, so I just want to talk about all those things. I'm not even sure where to kind of start because it's so much. But I guess some ways to sort of identify when moms are maybe taking on too much, or you know, when they've realized that they're just not, like you said, not feeling right, there's something off about it. I guess what would be the first steps that you would suggest for someone to take?
Yeah, so I think as women, we are socialized to kind of go, 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 and to orient ourselves to making sure other people are okay, whether that's our partners, our children, our parents, our peers, you know, like we're kind of socially trained to do that. And so one of the things I see in my practice a lot, and even in my friend group, I would say, is that women might be like the last ones to know that something is wrong. You know,
yeah,
they might have friends or partners who are like, "Hey, I think something is going on. Like you're irritable, or you're frustrated, or you're being really short with your kids." And the other thing we see is that our bodies tell on us.
Yes.
So when you're having tummy troubles or sleep problems or trouble concentrating, like all of those things are often signs that we are at a point where we've stretched ourselves too thin. And so I think this is where that mental load piece comes in too, is that often we don't even realize how many different things we're juggling. And I know one of the things that's come up, my husband and I have been married, it'll be 9 years this year. And one of the things that was really just like an interesting transition for us is I didn't realize how many expectations I placed upon myself as a wife that were expectations that he did not really have of me. Things that he didn't even ask me to do or take care of, mm-hmm. but I kind of took them on. And mm-hmm. then I was like resentful with him that he wasn't, you know, appreciative.
Like,
I don't think you needed to do that. Like, you can stop doing that thing that I don't care about. You know? So I think that's just like, I think it's a risk for us as women because it's almost like a badge of honor mm-hmm. sometimes to be able to manage all these different things. But sometimes the people in our lives are like, no, stop doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, husbands and even I think our moms sometimes say things that are leading to that, but we don't want to hear it because, you know, it's like your mom's just telling you how to be a parent or telling you how to, you know, run things when really they're probably seeing, you know, I know you, I love you. This is, you're not supposed, you don't need to do this or
you need to do all this. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think it can be helpful to just kind of sit down and reflect on what are all the things that I'm doing? Do I need to be doing all these things? Mm-hmm. Are there people I can ask for help or support? And maybe are there some things I can just let go mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe it's important to me or I like it or I'm interested in it, but I simply don't have the time to do it well. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be a challenge because some of us have a hard time saying no to things and have a hard time feeling like we're not doing everything we set out to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you, so how do you balance, or would you suggest to, you know, start figuring out, you know, I do love this thing because I've been there too. Like I've, you know, wanted to do all these extra things and they are really, you know, or they seem really important to me. Maybe that's what it is that it's really not that, but they seem important to me, but they just don't fit or align with where I am right now. Yeah. So what about trying to navigate those feelings when you're letting something go that you really want to do?
So I think it goes back to the core values piece. And another mm-hmm. thing is time. So with values, I can think this is important in the abstract, right? Or I can think it's interesting, but does it fit with what I want for my life right now? And I think those are two different questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other piece is maybe I'm interested in something and it is connected with my values, but I simply don't have the time to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't have the time to be engaged with it at the level that I thought I would.
Yeah.
Right. So I got asked to be in this like community organization. They wanted me to be a board member.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an organization where they have a like an executive board and then there's members who are just like regular members. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to be a board member and the organization is really interesting and I, you know, the cost kind of aligns with what I'm doing in the world, but I just don't have the capacity to be in a leadership position. And so the compromise was I'd love to join the organization, but I can't be a part of this leadership team. Right. And so sometimes mm-hmm. it's really negotiating how connected can I be? Maybe I don't have to totally give it up, but maybe I can step back and not do as much as I would have wanted to do or was asked mm-hmm. to do because mm-hmm. I'm one of those people, I would rather do it well or not do it at all.
Yeah.
What I don't want to do is sign up for something and then not be able to execute it in the way that I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's easier. You know, I'm saying it as if it's like an easy decision, but it's really not. I mean, it really takes a lot of thought and negotiation. And sometimes it's also just talking with people who know you well. And mm-hmm. just saying like, okay, you see me navigate the world. What do you think about this? Mm-hmm. How is this? And talking with your family, if I take on this thing, how is this going to impact us? Right. And so I think it is a real negotiation process, but at the end of the day, any one person only has so much they can give.
Yeah. I like that, that it can be a negotiation so that we don't have to always, I feel like moms are always feeling like they're giving up what they want and giving up something that they want to do. But yeah, if you can kind of negotiate that time and also realizing that you do have limited time is important. Right.
And, you know, after I had my son, I went through a really challenging period of just like being really overwhelmed with being mm-hmm. a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that came out of that process for me was that no one is served by me leaving myself off of my list.
Yeah.
And so just as my time as a mom or my work time or my clinical time or whatever is non-negotiable. The time that I set aside to care for myself and to do the things that restore me has to be just as set in stone. And mm-hmm. so for me, that means, you know, trying to commit to exercise. It means getting enough sleep, because if I don't get enough sleep, nothing gets done.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. it means I get my massages every month, because I'm the kind of person who carries tension in my body and I need that, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so those kinds of things, I really had to make those non-negotiables. And because if I don't schedule and set aside the time, it can erode. And then I've lost that time I needed for myself. And then I don't do any of those other things well. So I think the other thing we can do as moms, and this is a negotiation too, depending on what your family structure is like, is really set aside that time for self-care. Is it, you know, okay, I'm going to do my exercise time. So I need to make sure my partner is covering the kids for this period of time in the morning.
Yeah.
Is it, I'm going to, you know, I had to move my devotional time to bedtime because my son is an early riser.
Mm-hmm. So he's like, he wouldn't have that. As soon
as he wakes up. Right. But after he goes to bed, that's when I do my journaling, my devotional time, whatever. And my husband is very respectful of that. Like, he tries not to even come in our bedroom during that first 30 minutes after my son goes to bed, because mm-hmm. he knows that's my time to kind of regroup for the day. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is about deciding what's the time I'm going to commit to myself. And when I can have that restorative time, then I'm better at doing all the other things I might be trying to manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you bring up an important part about, you know, things may have to be a little bit flexible. Like, mm-hmm. I know it's, you know, it's a big thing to have that first wake up in the morning and you have this quiet time and you're, you know, with your cup of coffee, but that's not even possible. That's with little children. Mm-hmm.
The people who do that don't have little kids, or they have a partner who's just taking care of it in the morning. Like, I immediately I realized that was not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So it is me having that sort of creative mind to think, well, how can I make this work for myself? Which is an important part of it, I think.
Sure.
So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about were just relationships in general. Obviously, moms need that support, and we need, you know, people around us. But I guess, what would you say, you know, when we have those challenging relationships and things are just not working, you know, either there's some sort of conflict or there's a larger disagreement. I think the question I'm trying to get to is just kind of figuring out our own feelings around things and trying to, I guess, be this super mom, the super woman, where we try to cover things up and make things right. You know, I guess just in the sort of time when relationships are difficult, any suggestions or things that we could sort of do just in the meantime while we're working it out, if that makes any sense.
Okay, I think so. So the first piece I would say related to relationships is really just get curious about whether whatever the rift is a pattern or something that seems like it's only happened once. Like, is it situational, or is this really like the pattern of the way I interact with this person? Mm-hmm. Because if it's a pattern, it might mean that that relationship maybe isn't serving either of you the way it once was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If it's something that's situational, maybe you talk about it and you can figure out a way. Like, I think just like we have to navigate our parenting relationships and our romantic relationships, sometimes with our friendships, we just have to sit down and say, like, what's going on here? Or mm-hmm. like, what do we need? What's happening right now? You know?
Yeah.
And I think we sometimes are less likely to do that with our friendships because we feel like they should be like easy and carefree and we shouldn't have to work. But I think the reality is, like, you and I have, we've known each other since college a lot, mm-hmm. and our lives have changed since then.
Yeah.
And so you can't have the same relationship when you were 22 as you do when you're in your 30s. That's just not mm-hmm. how people work. And so sometimes it's just like figuring out what's going on in the relationship. I think the other thing that helps me in that regard is to have kind of different sources of support. I think it's dangerous to have like all your eggs in one social support basket, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. really thinking about what are the different, you know, Is it my family support that I can tap into? Maybe I have friends here in my area. Maybe I have friends that I've had for a while. And sometimes we can kind of navigate between those relationships to make sure that we're getting and giving what we need if there's a rift in one area for a period of time. And the other thing is that, especially if you have friends who are really true friends and know you well, sometimes you might need to go to another friend and just ask, like, am I tripping? Is this me? I had a situation with a friend that I've known for a long time. And we had this conflict that I really did not understand what was happening. Mm-hmm. And so I went to another friend who I knew would tell me the truth. And I was just like, okay, here's what's happening. Like, I need you to tell me if this is me, if I'm missing something or what's going on. And the friend was able, because she also knows me really well, was able to tell me, like, no, I think there's something going on that you're missing. Like, go back and ask this other friend, did something happen that maybe you don't know about? And sure enough, there had been this whole encounter with this other friend that I didn't remember that was really like coloring the way she viewed our relationship. But I never would have been able to see that if I hadn't checked in with someone who knew me well, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's helpful to have different circles of people, even if they don't know each other. But, you know, just people who can tell you about yourself in a way that is loving. And can also tell you, like, no, I don't think this is you. I think something is going on with this person.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've had to realize too is that sometimes people are just in a space where they can't be a good friend. You know, maybe they have other things going on in their life or they are overwhelmed. And I'm not one for like cutting people off unless there's some kind of egregious thing that happened. But I'm also okay with stepping away from a relationship for a period of time to maintain my own sanity. And so I've done that too. I've just said, look, I'm always going to love you and be here for you. I don't ever think there's not a time when you can't call me, but you've also got some things going on that I can't help you with right now. And so I'm going to take a step back. Call me when you need me.
Yeah. Great. I love that. I love all of that. You answered it very well, even though my question wasn't super clear, but you answered well. Great. Good. So last two questions that I ask every guest. First is, what is something that you are doing right now that is just for you?
So this is kind of ironic being a mental health professional, but I'm basically I tell my clients to journal all the time, and I'm not particularly great at journaling.
Doctors are the worst patients.
We are the worst patients. And so one of the commitments I made to myself this year is that I would really commit to a journaling practice, not for any particular reason or goal other than to just have a space that I can express my feelings and get out whatever I want to get out on a consistent basis. So that's one of the things that I'm doing that is just for me. It has no outside intention. It's, you know, I think it's been a challenge because like I said earlier, I'm such a schedule person. And so being in quarantine has really challenged my schedule. So it's been a challenge the past month or so. But, you know, I'm kind of getting back into it and I really enjoy it and it's really helpful. So I'm glad I told my clients to do it.
You're so smart.
Oh, great advice. but I really, that's something that I do just for me. And it really helps to manage my mood. And also when I've just had a really hard day, it helps me to reset so that when I'm done, I can really be present with my family. And that piece I really appreciate. So,
yeah, good. I like that. And then last question is, what is the number one thing that you must do or must have to keep all of the balls in the air?
Sleep.
I cannot function
without sleep. And I, you know, when I was in college, if I had 4 or 5 hours of sleep, I would be fine. Now I would be a maniac zombie if I only had that much. So, you know, it means I kind of have a bedtime. I mean, I'm not super strict about it, but I have to go to sleep because that is the thing that keeps everything going for me. I have to feel rested. And so I'm really committed to making sure I have not only that I sleep a certain number of hours, but that I have restorative sleep. So,
Great. Good. Well, I really appreciate you getting on with me, and I will have links in our show notes for your beautiful website and all the other places where everyone can find you.
Okay, great.
And you do some really fantastic lives about some TV shows that I'm sure everyone watched. I saw that you were doing one recently. What was that? I can't remember now.
So the latest one that people have requested is the Clark Sisters movie. I don't know.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. I was thinking that because I hadn't watched it yet. And so I was like, I need to watch this because obviously there's something to talk about.
Yeah. So we didn't talk about this earlier, but my clinical focus in my book is about mental health in the church specifically. And then I teach at a seminary. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what I do is like integrating faith and mental health. And so when I watched it like when it first aired, and I had people sending me messages like during the movie, like, when are you going to do a live on this? There's so much to talk about. So I'm sure I'll do one at some point in the future. I'm giving people a chance to watch the movie, but helping people navigate how mental health concerns show up in churches and the way we can respond appropriately. And that's kind of my area of expertise. So. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yeah.
Hey mama, I hope you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did. For show notes and information about today's guest, head over to mommyfaceted.com. Also, make sure to follow Mommy Faceted on social media. That's Instagram and Facebook at Mommy Faceted. And there you'll find some stuff that doesn't make it to the podcast, whether that's more information about me, what's going on behind the scenes with my family, information about our guests, and other little things about motherhood that may surprise you, may encourage you, and inspire you. Also, if you have a moment, please, please, please take some time to write a review. Whether you're listening in iTunes or Apple Podcasts, you can write a review and let me know which guests you like, which topics you're enjoying. Just share your thoughts. If you're listening on any other player, whether that's Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever you can find the podcast, make sure to subscribe so that you get notifications when the next episode comes out. All right. Thank you so much for listening, and I pray you have a great week.